Call in now. 715-845-2155. WSAU Feedback on AM 550, FM 99.9, WSAU.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Feedback. 8 minutes after 8 o'clock, the phone line, 715-845-2155. All right, let's get the math portion of the show out of the way right off the bat. Hopefully you've had a good supply of coffee this morning and a good breakfast. If you would, please take out a piece of paper and a sharpened number two pencil and let the quiz begin. Yeah, I want to talk about economics and money just for a minute or two, hopefully not to throw everybody into some type of a coma. All right, as I mentioned, a school in Santa Fe, New Mexico, wants to install $5 million worth of solar array panels onto their campus so that they can save about $200,000 a year in energy costs. Well, first blush, wow, that's a great idea. Let's save $200,000 a year in energy costs. Holy cow, that's great. How much was the price tag? Five million? $5 million. $5 million is the initial outlay. And you know, sometimes things have overruns. $5 million. Five million. But we're saving $200,000 a year, right? Yeah, okay. So 5 million divided by 200,000, you take the gazinda and you carry the one to the seven, and then you scratch your head, and then you put, oh, that takes 25 years. 25 years for you to break even. Now, that's not saving money, that's breaking even. And there's a whole lot of other factors. What if the equipment breaks down in that time frame? What if something, blah, 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 blah. All right, so who cares about the school in New Mexico? Really? All right, that's their problem. If they want to spend it, that's their money. You and I, let's you and I take a look at doing the same thing on a scale of our size, okay? So to use the same numbers and the same scale, let's say that we could spend $50,000 to put an extensive solar array on our home, resulting in a $2,000 a year energy cost savings. Now, I don't know about you and how much it costs to heat and cool your home, but you know, around $150 to $175 a month would actually be a significant portion of my energy expenses. And if it was cost effective, and that's the key, I would seriously consider it. So $50,000, all right, is what it would cost. Again, at $2,000 a year, $50,000, it would take 25 years to break even. You see why I'm using those dollar amounts? Of course you do. The first thing is, in 25 years, am I going to experience some kind of equipment failure on the solar array and need to repair it? Well, if that's the case, then I've got to come out of pocket for those repairs. And now that is added to the overall expense of the solar project, and now it extends the time frame for recouping my expenses. 25 years. How many people stay in a home 25 years now? Some. Not as many as used to, but some. In 25 years, how many people have to replace the roof on their home? Typically, solar arrays are put on the roof. Well, if the roof has to be repaired, don't they have to remove the solar array materials to get to the roof? And that's probably going to increase the costs. So now, maybe you're looking at longer than 25 years. In addition, $50,000 outlay. Do you happen to have $50,000 in your bank account? Okay, well, let's say you're fortunate enough to do that. You draw $50,000 out and you pay for the solar array. Well, now you're no longer getting the interest on that $50,000. So you're going to have to calculate what's the interest that you would have earned over that 25-year period and add that to the expense. And so at $2,000 a year, things are being pushed out a little bit. And you're saying, well, no, wait a minute. I don't have to borrow the money. I mean, I don't have it in my bank. I'm going to borrow it. Well, okay, that's going to cost even more. Now, I understand that if you buy a solar array for your home, there are some tax credits that come along with this that may offset some of these additional expenses that I've talked about. But you see what I'm saying? $2,000 a year at a $50,000 outlay in comparison with this school in New Mexico, it doesn't make any sense. There are too many factors that just are ridiculous. Now, if I could recoup my expenses, let's say in 5 years, maybe it would be more attractive. Now, there's some other issues that we'll talk about, but let's get to the phones. And first up is Sandy. Sandy, thanks very much for calling. What can we do for you?
Hi. I have some experience with switching over to all energy efficient things and having nothing saved at the end. And this is how it goes. It's a public utility. It's a for-profit. And the more we all use less, the less they have. Therefore, they jack up the rates.
Mm-hmm.
And over a short period of time, they've increased the rates so much that you don't have a savings compared to the cost that you've put in.
Sure, that is one. Yeah, that's a possible consequence.
It's not a possible. It's an actual consequence. I've had it happen. I've gone through a lot of expense to be all energy efficient and spend the money. And then when I call public service and I question them, because I had an energy audit beforehand, they said, well, the rates went up.
Mm-hmm.
So where's the savings?
Yeah.
I hate that commercial where they talk, oh, you're throwing your kid's bicycle over the cliff in your new TV. Because it's not true. You know, those things are not going to make that big a difference.
Unless we have the technology, like I said, that would bring me significant savings and recoup the expense to convert in a much less period of time, it's not financially sound decision. I mean, it looks good emotionally, and if all you care about is, hey, I'm using less energy, I'm making less of an impact, and that is worth the money, then look at it as an expense, but you're not really saving money. And I think that's what you're saying. Thank you, Sandy. I appreciate you calling in.
You bet. Bye-bye.
All right, let's go to Todd. Todd, thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Hey, good morning, Seth. The reason for my call is this, I guess. To start with, I understand where you're coming from with this school and the great expenditure or capital outlay that they'll have to get things up and running.
Right.
But at the same token, I mean, it's being done at a school. Realistically, it could be used for a course of study in alternative energy. The other problem that alternative energy seems to have is that when it is brought to the forefront like this here, people kind of poo-poo it immediately.
Okay, but why am I being negative about it?
Well, because you seem to be pointing out the possible downside of every aspect of it.
Because it does not make a sound financial decision.
Sound financial decision, I would agree with. Yeah, 25 years to recoup that kind of investment is kind of insane.
Yeah, that's all I've said. It's just that the technology doesn't warrant the expense.
See, this is what happens when this stuff comes to the spotlight. The media or just people that are just in favor of just keep drilling, punching holes in the ground, and let's just suck all the oil out of the ground we can without even thinking about and not even being smart enough to think about, geez, maybe I should have some alternative possibilities here.
Well, I have never said that we should not pursue alternative energy programs. And I've said before, I would love it if fuel cell technology in our automobiles would catch up to the demand and the performance requirements. I would love to run my my high performance vehicle, if I had one, on a hydrogen fuel cell.
I was going to say, I don't think you have a high performance vehicle, do you?
People do this work now.
And when the technology is such that it is feasible and economically sound, I will be on it like you wouldn't believe. I will support it. I will drive it. I will love it.
Let me ask you this:
Does
the government have a role in promoting the research involved in alternative energies? Because obviously, it could come into play for defense purposes and things like that.
I think it would be a good idea for the military not to have to depend on oil that we buy from foreign sources. I think it seems kind of silly for us to be involved in Middle Eastern conflicts when a portion of what we rely on comes from the Middle East. Keep in mind, Canada supplies the most, Mexico supplies the next, and other sources far beyond
Venezuela.
The middle. Yeah.
if DARPA or say the defense establishment came up with a technology that was workable and cheap.
Yeah.
Would they be obligated to share with the general public that technology, or would they hoard it to them, keep it to themselves?
Let me finish the answer to your first question. I would love to see the government incentivize private industry for the research, not subsidize it, not pay for it, and not conduct it, and not shove it down our throats when it's incomplete. Tax credits for companies that are doing the research, that type of thing, where it gives them the incentive to make the research, the incentive for the private industry to invest in it. Therefore, when it is a success, the industry that created it can then also profit from it. But the way it's being done now is the government is paying for the research. Research companies are getting millions, if not billions, of dollars of free money. There's no real pressure on them to perform. Well, you know, if we don't actually come out with a good product, we can always file bankruptcy on this federal loan that we got and rename the company and start all over again and get a new federal loan. WSAU, let's take our first break. WSAU's feedback, 715-845-2155. We'll be right back.
Sean Hannity, today at 2 on AM 550, FM 99.9, WSAU.
Welcome back to Feedback, 715-845-2155. All right, as long as I have the financial advisor hat on, we were analyzing the cost and return on making a green energy purchase or expenditure. Let me go into a little bit further, and then I'll cut it off. We won't talk about money much more. All right. When you are looking at your investment strategies, making comparisons and talking to your advisor about what you should do with your money and what you shouldn't do with your money, I want you to keep in mind the idea of opportunity cost. Okay. When an investment advisor shows you, hey, take a look at this, let's say a mutual fund. All right. This is the most typical. Hey, look at this mutual fund. Now, the last 10 years performance is no guarantee of the next 10 years performance. But look at this mountain chart is what we call it. And it's the chart of growth. You know, it shows, you know, the little ups and downs. But over the last 10 years, that $10,000 investment that you made now is worth, I don't know, I'm just going to pull numbers out of the air. It's now worth $50,000. Look how much you've, you know, really just done great. Look at you. You should be so proud. And you think, wow, you know, I mean, it looks like a good company company mix. And it looks like it's, you know, maybe in my risk tolerance. And yeah, I think I'll do that. And then you notice at the bottom of the information, this little tiny asterisk. And it says the performance on this particular chart does not indicate the performance and money weighted for taxation. What does that mean? You don't need to pay any attention to it. Move along. All right. What that means is, as your investment increases in value, you receive a little piece of paper at the end of the year that says 1099 on it. And that means you now have to pay your investment partner. Well, you didn't know you had an investment partner. Well, you do. It's called Uncle Sam. And they don't call it the IRS for anything, for nothing. If you take the words the IRS and scrunch it together, it spells theirs. You have to pay them theirs. So you get a 1099 report, and it says, congratulations, you've earned X number of dollars on your investment. You now, as a result of that earning, you have a tax consequence, a tax liability. The reason I bring this up and the reason I want you to discuss this with your financial advisor is that any time that you have an investment that earns interest, most of the time, let me qualify that, most of the time that you have a financial vehicle that rewards you with dividends, interest, capital gains, et cetera, there is a tax result. So that $50,000 at the end of that chart says, look, you started with 10, you ended with 50. Oh, that's great. I feel awesome. What that chart is not telling you by that little asterisk is how much in tax did that $50,000 growth cost you over the last 10 years? As you know, it's not hard to figure this out. If I started with 10 and I ended with 50, I've earned $40,000. But how much did it cost me? Well, I've got to deduct that out of that $40,000 in order to truly appreciate how much money I've made. Sure, I made $40,000, but it may have cost me, I don't know, $10,000, $15,000 in taxes. And I'm not done yet. That money that went to the IRS could have gone back into your financial portfolio, earning you interest. So now, not only have you lost you've lost the money, it's an expense that you have to send to the government, but now you've also lost the earnings of that money. That is lost opportunity cost. And it is a very real issue that you have to deal with in dealing with money.
And you would suggest that if we went to a fair tax situation, that all of those types of taxes would disappear and the government would fund itself with the fair tax.
The fair tax point, and if you want more information about that, go to fairtax.org. The fair tax movement would create a whole, just a beautiful opportunity for people to earn more with their investments. Absolutely. And it would it would have been a boon for me as a financial advisor because my clients would have had more money to deal with, but I would have had to recalculate a lot of the structures that I did of analyzing tax issues, lost opportunity cost, alternatives, and so forth.
That's one of the things we don't think about with the fair tax. Not only would it put a lot of the IRS agents out of work, it would put a lot of tax attorneys and accountants out of work as well.
It might, but if they're worth their salt, they will find other things to do. Would you like fries with that? Seriously, as an IRS agent having to go to work at Mickey D's, not going to cry a tear. And this is my final thought, and then I'm backing away from money because I can hear the coma happening right now. There is a big difference between an individual that wants to sell you a product and an individual that understands the economics of money. Anybody can put a prospectus in front of you. If they pass their Series 6, the investors and insurance licenses, if they've passed their test, anybody can throw a prospectus in front of you and say, see, this is what it did last year. Would you like to buy? But it takes a real financial advocate and an analyst and someone that is looking out for you to be able to do all of the work, in your case, on the economics. And last but not least, how you can tell if you're dealing with somebody that is really knowledgeable about economics and finances instead of a salesperson, ask them their attitude about whole life insurance versus term. If your advisor, this is my opinion, if your advisor says you should never buy whole life insurance and you should always buy term, keep shopping. They're a salesperson, not an advisor, not your advocate. WSAU Wisconsin Morning News, 715-845-2155. We'll fire up the phones when we get back.
The News, Talk, and Packers Station. News Talk 550, FM 99.9, WSAU.